You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined by Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening in on our Throwback Tuesday episode, final week of the 2020 regular season. Still hard to believe that we're already to this point, especially with everything that's going on off the field in this crazy 2020 year. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The Seahawks are heading to the playoffs for the eighth time in 9 years and captured their fifth division title under coach Pete Carroll in Sunday's 29 win over the Rams. Currently, Rob, the Seahawks have the number three seed. They can't do any worse than the number three seed for the postseason, because we know the NFC East is now going to be won by a team with a losing record. It's either going to be Washington, New York, or Dallas. One of those teams is going to be at least two games below 500 and win the division. So the Seahawks have the number three seed locked up, but there is still an opportunity for the Seattle Seahawks to get the number two or even the number one seed going into their final game of the year against the 49ers.
Yeah, and that's the exciting thing, Corbin. As you said, the Seahawks are locked into that number three seed, so you know that you have that in your back pocket. And there's a lot of conjecture out there that maybe Seattle would rest their starters just knowing that they have that number three seed. But that's never been the Pete Carroll way. You know that he's going to compete, and you look at the matchups with the Green Bay Packers. They're going to be playing the Chicago Bears, a team that has given them some trouble over the years, a very physical team, and the Packers look like world beaters against Tennessee. But it's interesting how teams sometimes can kind of ride that wave a little bit. So I think that the Green Bay Packers, the number one seed at this point, that there is a possibility that they would lose to the Bears. And then, of course, you have the New Orleans Saints, and they've certainly have struggled with their own consistency. And they're going to be playing against a Carolina Panthers team that has surprised some folks with just how much they have fought in Matt Rhule, his first season as head coach there in Carolina. So I think that there is a legitimate possibility that Seattle will be improving their seeding after week 17. Of course, it all is predicated on Seattle, doing what they need to do first, and that is being the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, and that's going to be easier said than done. Those two teams have had so many tough battles over the past couple years, and even with the injuries the 49ers have, you can expect they're going to be ready to play. They're going to want to go out with a winning note in a disappointing season that has had so many injuries they could not overcome them. But as you mentioned, the Packers and Saints both need to lose, and the Seahawks need to win for the Seahawks to get the number one seed. That would guarantee that they get a bye week, and then they would have a home playoff game in the divisional round. Slim odds. Most of the places I've seen are giving the Seahawks a 5% chance or less of that happening. I mean, the Packers and Saints both losing in the same weekend, it's not impossible, but it's improbable. Now, the number two seed, I think that is a more realistic one, and there are two ways that can happen. First, the Packers beating the Bears and the Saints losing to the Panthers. The Saints would drop to 11-5 if that happens. The Packers would be 13-3. The Seahawks would be 12-4. And so you wouldn't have to worry about any tiebreakers. That's pretty simple. The Seahawks end up with the number two seed. The second way that it happens, a little bit more complicated. The Packers lose to the Bears. The Saints and the Seahawks both win. And with tiebreakers, the Seahawks would end up being the number two seed over the Packers, because they have a better record against common opponents. Both teams would be 9-3 against conference teams, so it would go to common opponents. The Seahawks are 5-0 in those games. The Packers are 4-1. And then the number three seed, which Seattle currently has, obviously if they lose to the 49ers, they're the number three seed. There's no way they can finish better than that. The other way it would happen is if all three teams win. If the Packers and the Saints both win their games, the Seahawks are going to end up getting the number three seed, and they would play the number six seed in the wild card round. If they're number two, they would play the number seven. And so that leads to the opponents now, Rob. There are four teams that are in the picture the Seahawks could play on wild card weekend. The Bears and Cardinals right now are fighting for that last playoff spot, the number seven seed. That's why that Packers-Bears game is one to watch, because the Bears are going to be desperate going to this game. They need to win to get in. They have the tiebreaker advantage on the Arizona Cardinals. So if they win, they're that number seven seed. They get into the playoffs with a red hot finish that would make it four games that they won in a row to get into the postseason. So that's a game certainly to circle there. Arizona's in the mix as well. The Cardinals are going to be playing the Rams. The winner of that game is in the playoffs. The loser, most likely, is out of the playoffs. And so that game, there's major stakes, and potentially both teams will have backup quarterbacks playing in that game. And the Buccaneers, they are in the most dangerous team, in my opinion, of these four. They're likely going to be getting the number five seed, which would make it that the Seahawks are not going to be facing them. So you're ultimately going to have to deal with the Bears, Cardinals, and Rams. If Buccaneers lose this weekend to the Falcons, there's a way that they can end up dropping down to the sixth seed. So it is possible the Seahawks could play them, but it's interesting. I put this up on a poll, which team that the 12s would prefer the Seahawks play. The Bears got over 50% of the votes, 52%, Cardinals 28, Rams 15, and Buccaneers 3. But I don't know about you. I think with the Rams situation, Jared Goff having surgery on his thumb, not going to play this weekend. Even if they get in the playoffs, you got to be skeptical about his chances of being able to play.
Oh, I agree. I think that, yeah, if Jared Goff is not available to the Rams, then that they're going to be a shadow of themselves. And I don't think that Jared Goff played, you know, at an all-pro level or anything like that in Seattle's recent win. But at the same time, he is a significantly better option than what the Rams have on their roster otherwise. So that would completely tip the scales, in my opinion. Even if the Rams were able to get that dynamic rookie running back Cam Akers back onto the field, I do believe that the Rams without Jared Goff would be the easiest of those four possible opponents. I think that you mentioned, Corbin, that you put that poll out there on Twitter, and the Seahawks fans got to be careful what they don't get what they wish for here. 52.6% of them, at least when I'm looking at this poll, voting that they would rather play the Bears. As you mentioned, the Bears are hot. You know, and Mitch Trubisky is playing as well as I've seen him play since he left Chapel
and
Hill.
And their pass rush.
Exactly. And then the Khalil Mack on the one side, and Akeem Hicks doesn't get enough credit for what a spectacular player he is. We talked before about Roquan Smith, the middle linebacker guy who I thought, you know, should have been in the Pro Bowl this year. That is a dominant defense. The one thing I will say is that when I've watched Chicago, and my father-in-law is as big of a Chicago Bears fan as just about anybody I've ever met in my life. When I've watched Chicago, they are a very different team when they're at Soldier Field and when they're on the road. And so obviously, if Seattle is hosting this game, then you're hoping that Mitch Trubisky of the normally in the NFL, that Mitch Trubisky plays rather than the guy who has been just absolutely lighting people up here these last several weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. The Seahawks are going into this all in, as they should. There's been some speculation about resting players, but you've still got that number one seed within reach. And again, that game for the Packers is not going to be easy with the Bears. The way they're playing, they're desperate. And Carolina only lost by 3 points to the Saints earlier this year, and the Saints have had issues playing down to opponents at times. Carolina continues to battle for Matt Rule. That's a game that could end up going down to the wire between two divisional opponents. The Panthers want to end the year on a winning note, just as the 49ers do against the Seahawks. And so, again, it's not likely, but it is certainly possible that you could have both those top two teams lose. If the Seahawks win, they are now the number one seed. So you have to go all in here. It's going to be an exciting week 17 in the NFC. When we return for the second quarter, it's Throwback Tuesday. There's been a lot of talk about just how well the Seahawks defense has been playing the last 6 weeks. We're going to break down why their historic turnaround may be the best ever in NFL history. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you ready for some football? College football heads into bowl season. There are some big matchups this weekend. The NFL regular season is finishing up with the playoff picture becoming clear. The Seahawks looking for their 12th win as they take on the 49ers and several other games with playoff implications. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag. Wherever you get podcasts. It's Throwback Tuesday. Going to take a little bit different approach here, though, looking back in NFL history, Rob, because the Seahawks have been playing outstanding defense the past six games, giving up under 14 points per game. They're 5-1 in those games. So the defense has really turned things around. And I decided to spend a little bit of time this morning researching. There have been 13 NFL teams that have given up more than 300 passing yards per game through the first nine games of the season. The Seahawks, this is not a record that you want to have, but they gave up 353 passing yards per game in their first nine games, easily the most in NFL history. We talked about this ad nauseum in the first half of the season, how much this defense struggled, and yet, if you compare Seattle's results the last six games to every other team that's on that list in their final seven games, it's very obvious that this defense has executed a turnaround unlike any NFL team in previous seasons.
Yeah, and the thing that I like most about the data that you compiled, Corbin, is that it is comparing apples to apples. You know, sometimes you have these statistics that people will throw out there. Like, for example, the rookie quarterback for the Chargers, Justin Herbert, who has been brilliant for much of the season. He just set the NFL record, all-time NFL rookie record for passing touchdowns. Well, that's great. It's a completely different game now than when, you know, Dan Marino or John Elway were throwing footballs back in 1983, as we know. But of the 13 teams that you've listed here, all of them are of the current generation. 12 of the 13 are teams that have been listed since the 2010 season. So again, we are comparing apples to apples. We are talking about the way that you know the defenses are adjusting to the explosive offenses that are now throughout the NFL. And you really look at Seattle's numbers; they are absolutely staggering. In the first nine games, Seattle allowed 16 different touchdown passes and nine interceptions. The 2-1, roughly 2-1 ratio isn't that bad. But consider that in the last seven games for Seattle, they've only allowed six passing touchdowns during that time with five interceptions. I mean, almost a 1-1 ratio. That in itself is remarkable. Look at the sack numbers. 21 sacks over the last seven games compared to 22 sacks over the first nine games. And the 22 sacks may not sound like very much of a difference there, but of course, Seattle had seven sacks against the Buffalo Bills alone, a game that they lost, of course. So really, if you take out that 1-7 sack performance, then you're left with a team that had a total of 15 sacks in their first eight games. I mean, that was not very effective. So what we're basically saying here is that you have put together the statistics that prove what our eyes have already shown us, that once Seattle got Carlos Dunlap, Jamal Adams, there's a little bit more familiarity, a little bit more communication on that defense, then it's just like what Pete Carroll has been talking about, that this defense really is gelling it right at the exact time.
I love that you brought up the touchdown to interception ratio, because again, 16-9 in today's NFL is not bad. That's acceptable. But they've given up six touchdowns in their past six games. And that's the key here. This chart, all those other teams played in seven. The 2020 Falcons are on this list too. So the Seahawks and Falcons is based on their past six games. But Seattle has not given up a touchdown to a wide receiver since the Buffalo Bills game. So none of those six touchdowns have been to receivers. They've been to tight ends and running backs. That just tells you how well the secondary is playing right now for the Seahawks. And what really jumped out to me when I was compiling these numbers, obviously the sacks, as you mentioned, they don't look like there's a stark difference, but that one game against the Bills really changes the numbers dramatically if you take that outlier out of there. Otherwise, they were really poor at getting after the quarterback in their first seven games. They get Carlos Dunlap, and that's been a game changer. But not only have they given up 163 less passing yards per game in the past six games compared to earlier in the year, they've dropped 189 per game. They are also giving up nearly 16 points per game less over the last six games. They were giving up almost 30 points per game in the first nine games. That's the second most on this list of these 13 teams. Only the Bengals from 2018 had given up more, 32 points per game in their first nine games. So the Seahawks were not just giving up a ton of yardage. They were giving up a ton of points. They have been phenomenal the last six games in that regard. Two of the past three games, they haven't allowed the opponent to score a touchdown. And for that reason, you look at the rest of the teams on here, three other teams finished their last seven games giving up 8 points per game less than they did in the first nine. The Seahawks have doubled that, and they are giving up 15.9 points per game less over the past six games. That by itself, that is the most important statistic here out of all of these. Yardage can be a garbage stat. Scoring and points, that is not a garbage stat. That's what ultimately is going to determine your winners and losers. And for the Seahawks to be able to do what they have done in the past six games, we talked about it yesterday, all the credit to Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. and that coaching staff for getting these guys where they needed to be, making the adjustments, helping with the chemistry, the accountability, and making sure that these players were put in positions to maximize their skill sets. And they have truly done that. And we are now seeing the results on the field. Again, the numbers don't lie across the board. This is easily, from one half to the next, the greatest turnaround generated by an NFL defense in the history of the league.
It truly is remarkable. I mean, as you said, 15.89 points is what the difference that they are allowing over these past six games. I mean, just to put that in perspective, I mean, obviously that's over two touchdowns a game. You know, I mean, as you think about that, you know, over the course of 6 weeks, a month and a half, you know, if you were going to compare that to say Major League Baseball, I mean, six games in NFL season is obviously slightly more than a third of the season. So in a 162 game Major League Baseball season, if we were going to compare that to baseball, we'd be talking about a 70 game, you know, 65 game streak here. I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable. It's when you have the talking heads out there who will say, yeah, but who have they played? That kind of argument will apply for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, but not this many points, not twice as many points as any team in NFL history when you're comparing first half of the season to the second half of the season and not over that long of a stretch. It really is a remarkable turnaround by Seattle. The key, of course, is can they continue to do that? Because I love that you mentioned the way that Seattle has shut down opposing wide receivers. Well, buckle up, because the teams that they're going to be facing here in the future are going to feature some of the most dynamic quarterback wide receiver combinations in all of the NFL. So if Seattle can match their production over the second half of the regular season into the postseason, then who knows? We might be going right back to the Super Bowl in Seattle.
Yeah, the way the defense is playing right now, I know there were people scoffing at Jamal Adams' comment the other day after the game that we have the best defense in the NFL, but you look at the last six games, they have been the best defense in the NFL. By points, they've been one of the best in yardage, in sacks, and so as ridiculous as it would have sounded a few weeks ago, now it's certainly at least debatable. There is no debate, though, when you compare this defense to all the other ones before them that had the same struggles in the first half. There's never been a team that has been able to take a 180-degree turn like this at this level for this length of time. And I love that you mentioned, yeah, the opponents are certainly a factor, but it's the NFL. This is the NFL that we're talking about. And each one of these teams can win any given week. I mean, look what the Jets have done the last 2 weeks since the Seahawks beat them 40-3. All they did was beat the Rams and Browns, two teams that are trying to get into the playoffs. And so winning a game in the NFL, regardless of the opponent, is a big deal. And for them to do what they're doing right now, Sunday was a litmus test going against a Rams offense that has given them so many troubles, so many problems since Sean McVay became head coach. And Pete Carroll was talking about this yesterday. We decided to stop overcomplicating things. Let's get back to the basics. And look what happened on the field. They took care of the bootlegs that the Rams tried to throw at them when they tried to run their jet sweeps and reverses, they had minimal success. The run game wasn't able to get going other than a couple of runs that ended up busting loose. For the most part, they were contained. It was just a dominant overall defensive performance is what we've seen from this team over the last six games. And so they're going into the playoffs now with this unit clicking on all cylinders. They're going to get tested. As you mentioned, teams like the Packers and Saints have some really darn good receivers. Michael Thomas should be back for the Saints for the postseason. Obviously, Devontae Adams, one of the best receivers in football for the Packers. If they end up playing the Buccaneers, they are loaded at the receiver position. So their secondary is going to get tested much more than they have in recent weeks. But they handled the Cardinals. They handled the Rams during the six-game stretch. Some really good receivers on the outside. Took care of players like Robert Woods, DeAndre Hopkins. This entire defense is playing with confidence and swagger and is reflecting on the field. A lot to be really excited about with this Seahawks team heading towards the postseason. When we come back for the third quarter, the Seahawks getting their first division title since 2016 with a 20-9 win over the Rams. We talked defense yesterday. We're going to go to the offensive side of the football. Some takeaways from Sunday's victory at Lumen Field. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including six new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The Seahawks improving their record to 11-4 on Sunday and clinching an NFC West title for the first time since 2016 with a 20-9 victory over the Rams. This was a defensive football game all the way around. Seattle's defense carried the team to a division title. The offense, though, did do some things in the second half to help secure the victory. Let's talk some positives here on the offensive side of the football. And I know there are a lot of fans out there. I've had some discussions on social media about this today that are still very worried and very concerned about where this offense is at with one regular season game left to play. I have the same feeling that I did coming out of the Washington game last weekend, though, Rob. You're going against another top three defense in the Rams, a unit that has given Russell Wilson a lot of trouble over the years. They forced three turnovers out of him in the first matchup in week 10. I thought that the game plan, again, was really good. Maybe out of the initial couple drives, it wasn't where it needed to be, but Brian Schottenheimer made the adjustments necessary, and that was most noticeable with their improvements in third down situations. They were just 3-for-9 on third down in the first half, and they were 5-for-8 in the second half. It started with the adjustments, but of course, the clutch reception by David Moore, the 45-yard strike, Russell Wilson getting out of the pocket, as Pete Carroll and Wilson both mentioned, it really was a momentum changer, and it just seemed like it took a lot of weight off the offense's shoulders. Russell Wilson was playing much better, completed 11 out of 14 passes in the second half, and they were much better on third down. And I feel like it was a carryover just from having that one big play to really break the ice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was the exact opposite case for the Rams, who struggled to make any type of big plays believe their longest play from scrimmage all game long was a 25-yard throw. Seattle, as expected, this was a defensive battle similar to the one against Washington the week before, as you mentioned, Corbin. But to me, what was most encouraging about it is that Seattle did improve in the third down conversion rate in the second half. And you mentioned the numbers: 3 for 9 in the first half, kind of ugly; 5 for 8 in the second half. It might sound like we're kind of splitting hairs, but of course, after halftime, both coaches are able to make their adjustments. And we talked about this: championship teams finish, and that's exactly what Seattle did. I was just so impressed by Russell Wilson making the types of plays that Russell Wilson has been famous for making, for being able to feel the pocket collapsing around and being able to buy a little bit of time, and then having the confidence to make some of those throws. You mentioned the big throw down the field to David Moore. I mean, what a spectacular toss that was. What a great catch that it was from Moore. In the little dump off pass to Carlos Hyde that set up the touchdown. So those are the types of plays that you don't have to be the MVP kind of caliber player every single snap. You just can't make the silly mistakes that Wilson made in that first game against the Rams, basically contributing to all three of Seattle's turnovers in that game, the two interceptions as well as the fumble. We saw just what a direct contrast that Wilson was in this game in comparison to Goff, who of course threw the pretty ugly interception that he threw. That was the only official turnover in this game. But of course, the Rams were stopped twice on fourth down, so those also would count as turnovers in my book. So to me, that was what was so exciting about it, is that when the game was on the line, Seattle played its best, whether it be on the offensive side of the ball, whether it be on the defensive side of the ball. And then again, as I mentioned yesterday with defense, and I focused so much about on Jordan Brooks and Jamal Adams, KJ Wright, and just the physicality. What about the physicality of DK Metcalf? I mean, taking the passes over the field. I mean, he's running over middle linebackers out there, putting them on their butts. This is a wide receiver. Grant, he's 6'4", 230 pounds, but it was one of the first games where I've seen DK Metcalf play up to that size. We've seen his explosive speed. We've seen his incredible balls, because all the different things use that power that he had, and he did in this game. He just was an absolute beast in this game. It's one of the reasons why the Seahawks emerged victorious.
Metcalf, in my opinion, was the best player on Seattle's offense overall in this game. He might not have put up the gaudy numbers that he's had in other games, like against the Eagles earlier this year, the game that he had against the Cowboys, the big yardage totals, but he made several clutch grabs in the second half. And the one that you mentioned, that final scoring drive for Seattle that was capped off by Russell Wilson hitting Jacob Hollister in the end zone for a 13-yard touchdown, that does not happen if DK Metcalf does not turn after catching that shallow crosser from Wilson and lower the boom on Troy Reader. And that's exactly what he did. He used his size and just bowled over him to get past the first down marker. It was a case of one guy wanting the first down more than the defender wanted to make the play. And I just can't even imagine linebackers, corner safeties, when they see DK Metcalf catching the ball and turning towards them. That is not the guy that you want to tackle, especially after you see a play like that. And so he just continues to come up with clutch plays. I was hoping he would break Steve Largent's record in this game. He's very close, has a great chance to do that early in the 49ers game coming up. But it was still a really impressive game for him. He was very efficient with the targets that came his way. The one incompletion was a play where he had beaten Jalen Ramsey downfield, and Russell Wilson just simply overthrew him. So he was really efficient in this game. I thought he made some really clutch grabs, and David Moore with that clutch 45-yard reception as well. Those two guys really stepped up for the Seahawks in the second half. I thought the run game was solid. Pete Carroll talked about it after the game. They weren't able to get enough carries because of the fact they couldn't sustain drives in the first quarter, 3 for 9 on those third down opportunities. They weren't able to get as many carries to all of their backs as they wanted. But I thought Chris Carson ran well. He had a couple really nice runs in the second half to help guide this offense. When they got Russell Wilson involved a little bit in the run game, we saw him run it in for a touchdown, the first touchdown of the game early in the third quarter. I thought, considering the defensive line they were going up against, that the O-line did a solid job in the run blocking department. And really, that helped guide Russell Wilson in the second half when he knew he had those three running backs he could lean on in the backfield. They got the run game going a little bit, and getting him moving around. Again, I will say this time and time again, I think Russell Wilson is a much better quarterback when you get the blood flowing a little bit early in the game by having him run the football a little bit. It seems like he just becomes more accurate as a passer when you do that.
It does. It's kind of remarkable in that way because you see most other quarterbacks are the exact opposite. But yeah, it looks like it just seems like it gets his competitive juices flowing, like he has a little bit better field vision and just kind of recognizes where his receivers are. And to me, that was one of the things that really stood out as well. It's just the ball distribution, the fact that they did throw six completions to their tight ends that it's a three-headed monster there with Hollister, Disley, and Olsen. But still, to have six receptions to your tight ends, that equals the amount of catches that DK Metcalf had in this game. So it kind of forced the Rams to have to cover the entire field. I would absolutely agree with you that I thought that Chris Carson had a strong game. Would have loved to have seen him run, had a few more opportunities, because I do think that the Rams are vulnerable to the run, and Seattle was able to do that at times. And then the other thing that I really wanted to make sure that I give some credit to, because I was kind of talking about DK Metcalf basically just beasting people, but at the same time I also want to give some credit to Schottenheimer as the play caller, just because I thought that Seattle did showed a little bit more route diversification, and you saw some of those shallow crosses. And I've always wondered why you don't see a guy like Metcalf with his size doing more like that. You saw sometimes where Seattle would use some motion, be able to clear out some space, and the long reception for Tyler Lockett, for example. I mean, that was so wide open because he had receivers going over the top to help clear out that space. So I really liked how Seattle used their receivers kind of in conjunction to be
a lot of high-low action.
Exactly. That high-low action that really created space and allowed Russell Wilson to kind of pick which option he liked best.
As far as negatives go in this game, there certainly were some when you only score 20 points. Yeah, they were playing against a really good defense. Again, my viewpoint is you shouldn't be concerned about this offense because of who they've played the last two games. Washington and the Los Angeles Rams are both legitimate top three, top five defenses across the board, especially with that defensive line that both teams have. But I thought the offensive line struggled with stunts. This wasn't even necessarily about the players they were going up against. It just didn't seem like communication was there, especially in the interior. They were having trouble with text stunts throughout the game, first half in particular, and that left Russell Wilson vulnerable at times. I did think for the second straight week that Cedric Ogbuehi was the best overall offensive lineman for the Seahawks. He had a couple really nice second-level blocks in the run game. He gave up three pressures, but most of the day was able to keep Russell Wilson protected in pass protection. So the Seahawks have been able to afford resting Brandon Shell and making sure his ankle gets healthy for the postseason because of the way he has played well against two really good defensive fronts. The Seahawks have to be thrilled with how he's been able to perform as a reserve the last couple of weeks. Overall, though, O-line, the stunt stuff, that's some stuff they're going to have to look at in the film room and clean up this weekend, because you can bet your bottom dollar San Francisco is going to try to do some of the same stuff with their front line, which still has plenty of talented players like Eric Armstead and Javon Kinlaw up there. And the other thing that I've noticed, we can say this a lot of games, but there were certainly some missed opportunities in the first half. I actually thought Seattle, it might end up biting him in the butt in the second half, that they didn't get the touchdown to Jacob Hollister. He got one later in the game, but he could have had two in this game. He came wide open late in the second quarter on a wheel route. And yes, there was some contact as he broke into that route, and they could have maybe called something, but the throw was way over his head. Even with that small timing variance, I don't think it would have been completed. That's a pass that Russell Wilson just flat out missed. And so they had to settle for a field goal on that drive. There was a bomb to DK Metcalf that he had separation against his defender, and Russell Wilson just didn't have the ball on the mark. He had another one to Tyler Lockett that Lockett had a step or two in his defender, and he just overthrew it a little bit. And there was an earlier play, second drive of the game, third down, Lockett's wide open on a short route just past the sticks, and Wilson's staring at him and doesn't throw it, ends up getting sacked by Sebastian Joseph Day, and they have to punt. And so those are the kind of plays they're going to be going back looking at on tape, and they're going to be saying, we have to correct those issues, because if they were able to hit on two or three plays there, we might be having a much different discussion today. Seattle might have been able to blow this thing out a little bit in the first quarter, especially with the way the defense was playing against a Rams offense that was really struggling to generate explosive plays. I think they have a quarterback that gets banged up in the second half. This game could have been a much wider margin of victory than it ended up being if they would have been able to capitalize on some of those chances that were presented to them.
I absolutely agree with you. At the same time, the one thing that, again, I kind of come back to is the fact that all of those plays that you just mentioned, Corbin, all were in the first half. And Seattle did make the plays in the second half. And to me, that's the most encouraging thing. Because you're right. Russell Wilson did miss some wide open throws. I thought that it was kind of comical when he was complaining for the pass interference or the holding on Hollister, because he flat missed him, as you said. I mean, it was 10 yards over his head. It didn't matter if he slowed down or not. You know, and then while it was inspirational to see Greg Olsen out there on the field, he also had a drop that I thought that they could have really made things a lot closer in terms of converting for another first down. So there certainly were some things that you can nitpick on, but as you said, you know, the Rams have as fearsome as a defensive line as there is in all of football. Jalen Ramsey is an absolute superstar. He can basically cut half of the field away from you, and yet Seattle still found a way. And so to me, that is the most encouraging thing here, is you are going against two teams who are, you know, schematically and in terms of just the personnel that they have, are really designed to beat teams just like the Seahawks. And Seattle took their best shot and then pulled away in the second half.
Yeah, the game plans were excellent the last 2 weeks. And I've had this argument with fans countless times here the past couple of weeks, because, oh my gosh, the offense is struggling. We only scored 20 points in these games. And what's wrong with Russell Wilson? And those arguments seemed much more palpable to me after that Giants game. That was really an offensive struggle. But you've seen they have catered game plans based on the fact that we're playing against really stout defensive lines. You're not going to be able to drop back and throw a lot of bombs, have 5-7-step drops with Russell Wilson. You are asking him to get sacked multiple times if you do that. I thought Brian Schottenheimer was masterful the last couple of weeks. They might not have put a ton of points on the board, but they did a really good job, especially in the second half this game, of moving the chains, had a couple of really lengthy possessions to keep the ball out of the Rams' hands, and finished both of them off with 7 points. With the way the defense is playing, if you're running the football well, you're taking care of the ball, no turnovers in this game again, you do all those things, you're going to be very difficult to beat in the postseason. And that's what the Seahawks are doing right now. Coaching staff has done a good job adjusting to make it happen. The players are holding on to the football. The run game's working. So it's an exciting time. I still think this offense is going to be able to get things going as they get into the playoffs. They're going to be playing some defenses that maybe aren't quite as good as what the Rams and the Washington football team are. And they're going to have more opportunities in those games to be able to take some of those shots. And I think you'll see this offense. I really felt like Russell Wilson woke up in the second half of this game. And you saw DK Metcalf make a couple of those clutch receptions. It seems like the offense is trending in the right direction, even if the points haven't necessarily been where fans want them to be at this stage. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Make sure to leave us a review. Coming up on our Wednesday show, as we always do, we're going to be breaking down some matchups to watch as the Seahawks travel to Arizona to face the 49ers in their season finale. Still plenty of hope to get the number one or number two seed in the NFC. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.